Are you trying to decide if you are ready to date again after narcissistic abuse? It's not an easy thing, and a lot of people make mistakes by getting out there too early. My guest today is Sandra Brown, and she is the author of so many books, and so much work has been done. Why Women Love Psychopaths was one of the first books out there that brings together the relationship with narcissists, psychopaths, and narcissists. And she's doing such great work. But today we're going to talk about some of the things that you need to know before you go out dating. And I've used a couple examples in the recording, so you're going to see, ooh, that could have been me. Make sure you are aware that it's not just knowing what the red flags are. A lot of people are like, I know all the red flags, I'm ready to get out there again. Well, guess what? It's, are you ready inside? Has the trauma healed? It's not just knowing about them. It's about you being ready to get out there and not make mistakes, because if you're not completely healed, you will get taken advantage of if you happen to run into another narcissist. And we know they're out there. So let's make sure you're ready, and let's welcome Sandra. Welcome, Sandra. I am so excited that you're here. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Well, I would love to start off by just having you give us a little background about you, because you've been in this business for a long time and you've been helping so many people in so many ways. Can you just share a little bit about yourself?
So I am a psychotherapist. I have worked with this population in this field for about 30 years. My book, Women Who Love Psychopaths, was one of the books that sort of helped launch this field in recognizing these types of pathological relationships. So we work with survivors, and we also train therapists how to work with survivors.
Yeah, I have a great book that you wrote on how to people that are in trauma in this type of situation. So that was like cores. I'm like, let me find out what she says. It was awesome. And you guys have
Great.
courses and programs that can help people. We can talk about those later, but I know a lot of my clients have gone through your program and it's helped them a lot.
Thank you. Awesome. It's good to hear.
That's good. A little feedback is always good.
Yeah.
And so today we are here to talk about how do we know if we're ready to date again? Because what happens, and I'm sure you experience it as well, is that victims go out and decide they want to date again. They're very hyper-focused on the red flag. That was gaslighting. That was this. That was it. But they aren't looking internally. So how does someone know if they're ready to date?
Right. I know, so many survivors, get advice from family and friends that the best way is to get back out there, go just distract yourself. And the problem is that this particular population of survivors is a high trauma population. I mean, so many of them come out of these relationships, with trauma symptoms or full-blown trauma disorders. And the problem is, a lot of times they don't know they have trauma, so they didn't go get trauma treatment. And then they get back out there and they're not ready. It triggers all of their symptoms. And so I think it's really important for this population, because we do know the trauma numbers, that they get assessed to know if they had trauma or they do have trauma, because the worst thing you can do for trauma is then get back out there and get re-triggered, and it takes them down, for months. And so I think, with this population, we have to rule that out, that since trauma is so prevalent, whether or not they have it. And so if they do, that's what they should be working on, not dating, because their symptoms, because they become triggered. They tend to have what we call hyperarousal, which is they see a narcissist behind every tree, that they are so hypersensitive to that issue that they are, really highly suspect, can't let their guard down because they're so worried about those things you were talking about. Oh, love bombing. Oh, flying monkeys. Oh, and that's a sign of this hyperarousal that needs treatment before they can actually settle, into a relationship. And, if they have trauma, the other problem is that they, it tends to numb, the central nervous system that we need in order to be able to identify and feel our intuition. And you sure don't want to go out there numb and without being able, to sense whatever red flags or intuition you're getting. And very often that, that whole central nervous system has been tampered with from trauma.
And I told you before we talked today about a friend of mine who went through a horrific divorce and was just freaking out and went out with a guy and he opened the car door. She literally freaked out. Love bombing! Ah! Like, I mean, it is just so obvious that she doesn't need it. But what are the other signs?
Well, we have a
Necklace.
yep, and feel free to give this out, like put a link to it. Yeah. So this is called Signs It's Too Early to Date checklist. And a lot of these have what we were just talking about. It has a lot of the symptoms of trauma, and if you don't know if you have trauma or not, it would be important to read this list because you might be surprised that some of the symptoms you're having are actually trauma. One of the things that always stands out to me is when survivors still have what we call reconnaissance behavior. And that is when they are still doing drive-bys on social media, checking in with other people, doing real drive-bys, his house, trying to get into his accounts, that kind of stuff. And that's called, what we call reconnaissance behavior. But really, that is hyper arousal and trauma. That's exactly what that behavior is. So if a survivor is still involved in any level of that kind of reconnaissance behavior, there's more, it points to that there's more work to do. Let's see, brain fog certainly is a big one that comes from trauma, but it also comes from cognitive dissonance, which is one of their main symptoms that they have after that. And so that is certainly a big one because it often points to, for instance, the cognitive dissonance that may not have reduced, and they don't want to be dating when their cognitive dissonance hasn't reduced, as well.
How can that hurt them? Give me an example of the cognitive dissonance that would creep into, say, a dating situation.
I don't know if it would creep into the dating. It's more. Cognitive dissonance, especially, when it's really full blown, is this comparing and contrasting of perceptions. I love, I loathe, I trust, I distrust. But what I notice is that then instead of it being the comparing and contrasting of their former partner, it then sets up comparing and contrasting of the partner to whoever they are out on the date. Yeah. And so, yeah. And then it's all, they're not present. They're all foggy. Their brain is on fire, and this comparison kinds of thinking. And and like you were talking about, being sort of paranoid, oh, they opened the car door, that's love bombing kind of stuff. So when we haven't dealt with this, the two primary symptoms that survivors tend to have, trauma and cognitive dissonance, we can't expect to go back out there and turn those off. It's not a switch. Oh, I think I won't have trauma tonight. Here, let I'm not going to have cognitive dissonance tonight. I'm just going to turn it off. You're not bringing your best self, your healed self, to the potentiality of a relationship. And, most survivors say, oh, I'm just distracting myself, or I'm not looking for a long-term relationship. Well, a lot of times you're not. But if it happens along and you're not presenting your best, healed self, and then this is one of the few normal guys floating around the planet. They've missed a, missed their opportunity, and it really isn't fair to the other person, if we're really honest, to be not healed and traumatized. And someone's going to get hurt, and it's usually both.
Sure. I know a lot of people also go out there under the pretext of, but I don't want to be alone. I'm so afraid. I'm lonely. I'm sad.
I think that's like the number one risk factor, really. Because it's not that you're just lonely, it's that with that, when you are not enough, when you don't have adult skills to manage the feelings of being alone, and you can be alone and not lonely, a sort of adult management skills of that. Is that it's not just that they're lonely, it's that what you will do to trade that. Yeah. So they end up, keeping company with people just for the sake of not being by themselves. And it's a horrible risk factor for relapse and for repeating a, pathological relationship, because it almost implies not a boundary about, yeah, about who you are willing to spend your time with, especially if you're discounting it and saying it's just a, I'm just doing this for a distraction, or I'm practicing. I got to get my skills back up. I got to be reading my red flags. So I'm not really dating, I'm practicing. And yeah.
That so many times, and you and I both know that the vulnerability risk in being like dependent on someone to fill your happy hole. I'm lonely.
Right.
Destroys a relationship because it's showing we're not good on our own, as you said. But it also opens up to the narcissist coming in, going, "I'll save you."
Right, exactly. And if that's always been a big issue, for a survivor, they need, that's a long-term treatment issue. Because not everyone sort of has the hole in the soul. Usually, what a lot of these survivors have is a bullet wound.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, they've been hit, and taken down temporarily. But people who walk around and have feel like they have a hole in their soul, that's a whole other thing. Whole other thing that it is a huge risk factor. But and that probably needs differentiation. Somebody needs to know about themselves. Am I someone who has had this, hole in the soul from childhood, or have I ha do I have a bullet hole to, from this go round with someone? And of course, those are different, treatment needs and different time periods and things that would be necessary for two very different people to date again. I always tell my clients in our programs, we actually ask people to commit when they enter our program to not date. That this is, are we taking this seriously? Are we really doing treatment here? So, we ask them to wait. And I tell them it's always longer than you think it is. So you might feel ready at a year or 6 months, but what I'm looking at, I'd ask you to add another year to that. And yeah, and so it's always longer than what they think. But every time, I mean, I could retire. If I had a dollar every time that they don't listen and they think, well, she doesn't really know me real well, and I'm going to go out there and do it. And back they come into the program, sucking their thumb and in a fetal position because they've been traumatized out there. And they're like, what happened? I just had a meltdown when we were at dinner and he didn't even do anything. I've been so not okay for weeks and weeks. What, oh my God, what did I do? And it's too soon. It's always longer than what they think or hope.
And for me, I've been single for many years now. I freaking love it. But just with so many people going, let's get back on the horse. Like, is if there's something wrong with it? How do people combat your messaging, stay away, and their friends telling them to get back on the horse?
Right. I think they need to say this is what works for me, that I'm not avoiding, I'm healing.
Ooh, I like that.
Right. And that, I want to make sure that I only have to do this once because it's been really painful. I want to put all my effort into a strong recovery so that when I get back out there, I'm not triggered. And that what looks like avoidance to you, it is actually really working a program and healing for me. And so you do you and I'll do me. And just they should not succumb to that because a lot of times our friends don't haven't been through what we've been through. It's very this is not a bad breakup. This is like eons and galaxies beyond that. And good for them if they haven't had that, because we don't wish it on anyone, but we can't listen to what someone who hasn't been wounded at this level or have this level of trauma, is telling us that works for them. And that's great if it works for them, but it goes back to what we first started this conversation with, is about recognizing whether or not you have trauma, because survivors who really do know that they have trauma tend to invest more in their relationship and expect to spend more time in healing kinds of modalities. But if you just think it was a bad breakup, you're going to dust your feet off and try to get up in the saddle, and it's you're going to get triggered, and then you're worse and you're worse and you're worse. So it's helpful for people to know what they're trying to heal from, and then that helps to balance, I think, the expectations when something has been, really traumatizing and really does need a lot of recovery work.
Again, it's different for everyone, but the trauma of being alone is often another trauma to people, especially those who have been with someone for 30 years. The alone time is not something they're ready to face, and it is the most thing because you have to get comfortable in who you are. You have to remember who you were, because if you've been married for 30 years, you're
That's
probably
right.
floundering.
It, I, oh, of course. And you know, who they are has changed so much over the years through age and through trauma, if they were in this relationship that long. And so, you know, recovery is really, I think of it as like life restructuring. You know, it's not that we're just trying to get our flashbacks to go away or we're just trying to not have cognitive dissonance. It's that we have to rebuild a life. And for people, you know, that have been married 30 years and coming out of that, that's, you know, 20 some hours a day while he was gone at work and then he's home and they've got all that time, you know, to have to build a different kind of life with. And that's another reason why, you know, recovery takes more than a hot minute. It takes, you know, longer than what we think.
Than what we think, and longer than we usually want, unless you're like me that thinks that being single is awesome.
Right. You know what? I learned so much about this field from watching my own mother.
Really?
And yes, and a lot of the techniques I teach, I wasn't in the psychology field when she went through a pathological relationship. And a lot of the stuff I write about as technique, was what I watched her do in order to try to heal. And you know, her last pathological relationship, she was 60 when it ended. And so she's going through, you know, sort of winding out a career, now not having anyone, and aging and broke, because of course they always take the money. And she really had to do that to build a life, I mean, from scratch. And she said, I could have absolutely despaired at having to do that, but I chose to see it as a canvas. And how creative could I get with rebuilding my life? And she became a painter, a sculptor, a potter. She just bloomed. And she said, we have to begin to see life, that life, our life, is the cake, and any relationship is the icing. And we have done that the wrong way. And when I don't live a life big enough for who I am and fill it, and sit around and wait for other people to be my entertainment. She said, I tend to drift sideways into pathological relationships when I'm not living a big enough life. And after, you know, her, she was like you, after she had been on her own a while, and that now she's painting and sculpting and doing all this cool stuff and traveling and, you know, and she didn't have a lot of money, but she said, I, you know, I wouldn't trade this for anything. And that she learned to love being by herself. And she said, I'm not lonely. And so she only lived 16 more years after that last pathological relationship. And the last night she was alive, she asked to toast her life. And we poured drinks, and she held up her Jack Daniels. And she said, I am proof that 16 good years lived well is enough. Yeah. How many, I probably couldn't toast my life now, and and say that. But there's such hope in that recovery when people are able to restructure their lives and build a life worthy of living and letting their life be the cake. And if some icing comes along, that's great. If not, we can all eat plain cake.
Exactly.
Right.
I love that. That's an amazing story, and how blessed you were
Oh, a
to
phenomenal person. Yeah.
I mean, what a gift. Is there anything else? I know we have a long list and we want everyone to
Yeah.
download it, but let's just hit one more point. What is a what something on this list, 30 things that you go, people need to know?
If your children have not been treated for what they too have experienced.
Okay, explain that a little more.
So while everybody thinks they're just out there playing and not getting serious, we all know these are the women that are made for relationships. So they do tend to get serious. And so I think we underestimate, what our children have been through with this. A lot of the kids have cognitive dissonance. A lot of them do have trauma symptoms. And since these are the women most likely to end up getting serious, those men are going to come into the children's life. And if she's not ready, they're going to go out of the children's life because that relationship isn't going to work. And then she's going to go out there and find someone else, and they're going to come in, and she's still not ready, and they're going to go out. And these kids probably already have attachment issues, and now you're bringing people through that you think is casual to children that haven't been treated, children that have trauma, children that still have cognitive dissonance. So that's always something, we cover in our program is okay, you go do you and put the oxygen mask on you, and then your children are next before you step a toe out there, to start dating. Is that your kids, your household needs work, your kids need work. Stuff's been heading south, for a long time, and there's got to be a process of stabilization, and that includes the kids. So I always say, after you're stable, you need to start getting your kids in treatment. Then come back in a year and we'll talk again about whether or not, you're ready.
Such a valid point. As you were talking, I thought of my son. I remarried husband number two 6 months, narcissistic, me off my feet. And then that person broke his heart as well. So he has two abandonment wounds from
Yes.
not slowing down.
Yeah, exactly. And I would say that's like the number one thing that these survivors talk about is the horrible guilt about how this has impacted them, that impacts their kids, and how it impacted their kids. And so, the last thing, of course, they want to do is go repeat that, again. But that's what happens when people get back out there when they haven't had, the level of treatment and their kids stabilized before they get out there.
This has been
Yes.
an amazing list, and I'm gonna put the link down below for
Yeah.
everyone to download it because there is a lot more, but it is something that we wanted to open for discussion. We can talk all day, but nobody's gonna stay.
Yeah.
So why don't we close out by you telling us a little bit about the Institute and what you guys do?
The Institute is a survivor-based service. We have an online trauma reduction program for survivors of narcissistic and psychopathic abuse. It is evidence-based, trauma-informed, all that good stuff. It's about a year long. We have products and services in telehealth. counseling. And then we've branched off and began a professional association for therapists to begin teaching them in an evidence-based trauma-informed model of care to treat the survivors. So that's what we do.
Tell me once again, where can they find you?
SafeRelationshipsMagazine.com. If you are a therapist, you can go to SurvivorTreatment.com.
Hey, thank you so much for doing this interview with
me. Thank you. Thank you.
And I am so honored to have you here today.
Thank you.
I hope that you guys found that helpful. Sandra is brilliant, and she has a lot of really good information that's going to help you determine if you're ready to date again, as well as all of the other things that she does. Please download the Signs It's Too Early to Date Again checklist, and we'll put a link down below. It's going to help you. And it's not just about the simple things, as we said. It's a much bigger picture, and you should not be listening to the voices that are telling you to get back on the horse. If you're not ready, more danger is involved, right? This is a risk that you don't want to take. So take the time to heal before you go out there, and make sure that you are safe when you do go out there, so that you are completely confident that you're going to make the right decision if someone does X, you know what it is. So this is Tracy Malone. I am the founder of NarcissistAbuseSupport.com. I am a coach, and I am here to help you if you need me. You can follow my link down below, and I look forward to seeing you again soon. Thank you.